From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open today's program with an episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Johnny Dollar, the insurance investigator with the action-packed expense account. The series had a very successful run on CBS from 1949 to 1962, with a one-year hiatus during the 1954-1955 radio program season. There were no fewer than 8 different actors who portrayed Johnny Dollar. Dick Powell and Gerald Moore both auditioned for the series, but were never heard on a regular basis. The first 3 actors to portray Johnny Dollar on radio were Charles Russell, Edmund O'Brien, and John Lund. It can be argued that the most successful actor to portray Dollar was Bob Bailey. He portrayed Dollar in the mid and late 50s, including during the time when the series was at its peak as a daily 15-minute radio serial. For a short time in 1960, Johnny Dollar was portrayed by Robert Reddick, and the 8th and final actor to portray the character, Mandel Kramer, whom we'll be hearing in this episode. As originally broadcast, November 26th of 1961 on CBS, it's The Mad Bomber Matter.
Johnny Dollar.
Dollar, my name is Parnell. Hank Parnell. I live out here in Muddy Gap, Wyoming.
Mr. Parnell.
Yeah, just call me Hank.
All right, Hank. What did you say the name of your city is?
City? Why, it's only a little town, Dollar. Muddy Gap, Wyoming.
Muddy what?
Well, just what it sounds like. Muddy Gap. Muddy Gap.
I see.
Yeah, due west of Casper, south of Powder River. It's not too far from where the Poison Spider Creek begins. You look it up on a map, and, well, here we are.
All right, I'll look it up, but what seems to be your problem, Hank?
Oh, Dollar, I'm the owner and editor and reporter and, well, just about everything else in Muddy Gap Weekly Tribune.
Yes?
I'm also the only agent for at least 50 miles around here for the Great Southwest Insurance Company.
Oh, I see.
Yes, sir. Now, I wonder if you could hightail yourself out here in one big fat hurry.
Well, that,
And that means on that little old expense account of yours, can you do it?
Well, that depends. You are talking about insurance business now, aren't you?
Well, not yet, Dollar, but, well, put it this way.
Yeah?
Unless you can give us a hand, Great Southwest is plumb liable not to have any office or agent or anything else out here anymore.
Afraid I don't understand.
Well, then let's put it this way.
Yes?
What I want you out here for is to keep the town of Muddy Gap from getting itself blowed right clean off the map. Well, sir?
Well, sir, I'll be out to see you.
The CBS Radio Network brings you Mandel Kramer in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator,
yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Greater Southwest Insurance Company branch office in the town with the unlikely name of Muddy Gap, Wyoming. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Mad Bomber matter. Expense account item 1, $192.80 transportation by plane, train, and car to Muddy Gap. That includes a stop and bite of late supper at Casper, Wyoming, where I picked up a rental car. Muddy Gap is in the middle of thousands of acres of rangeland for beef cattle in what used to be Indian country, where the Sioux and Cheyenne carried out many a bloody raid against wagon trains plodding along the old Oregon Trail. There's oil in this country, too. Muddy Gap consisted of a railroad siding, one main shopping street, and a surprisingly neat residential section, all of it pretty much surrounded by a tank farm. How many millions of gallons of crude oil were stored in those huge steel tanks, I'll never know. But it must have taken a mighty big pipeline to handle it. It was obvious that oil storage was the town's principal business. The combination insurance and newspaper office sat alone at the end of the street, and despite the late hour, Hank Parnell was there waiting for me. He was a long, lanky, not too bright character, dressed in jeans and open shirt, cowboy boots, and the inevitable white Stetson. Instead of a horse tied up out front, he had a battered old touring car minus the top and covered with oily dust to get out and around and dig up news items for his paper, he said.
And I guess I forgot to tell you, Dollar, I'm also mayor of this town, a sort of city clerk.
And dog catcher as well, Hank?
Well, now, you know something? If we had enough head of dogs around here to worry about, I'd probably be that, too. And I'm also sort of acting police chief while Rafe Tucker's down to see his relations down in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So, you see, I got plenty of reason to be worried about this nice little town of ours.
Worried about what, exactly?
You notice all them big oil tanks all around out there?
Oh, you sure got a lot of them.
Yes, sir. You imagine what would happen if one of them, just even one of them, was to maybe explode? Dollar, there'd be just one long, continuous boom, and Muddy Gap wouldn't be no more. And maybe nearly 300 nice, fine people either be dead or, at the very least, homeless.
Well, do you think something like that might happen, Hank?
Unless you can somehow stop it, Dollar. Or rather, I mean stop him.
Who?
Billy Benbow's his name. Born and brought up right here in Muddy Gap.
Yeah?
A real bad boy. Always in trouble. Been a little older, he'd spend most of his time in a jail.
Mm-hmm.
So when the last war came along, my father, he run this paper then. He got an idea for ridding us of Billy. Yeah, so we wrote a couple of editorials or two to sort of pass on that idea. First thing you know, the draft board kind of caught on. The first thing he knew, Billy Boy was in the army.
Well, I'd say that was a pretty smart idea, huh?
Yes, sir. Except that when Billy realized how he'd been kind of... well, railroaded into the service, he swore loud and long as to how he'd come back here someday and get even with this town.
Well, I don't see why. What's wrong with the army?
Oh, not a thing. Not a thing. Just the way he got put there that rankled him.
I see.
Anyhow, all time he was on the other side, they had him working on explosives. He got to be a real expert. Every time he'd set off a charge, you know, to blow up a railroad or a bridge or whatever, he'd say, yeah. Now, that's for so-and-so. Bahoom. And this one's for so-and-so. Bahoom. And every time he'd name somebody here in this town, starting, of course, with the draft board.
Became a real obsession with him.
Oh, it was more than that. It was like a mania. Yeah, Billy Benhall simply wouldn't forget.
Now, surely, Hank, after all this time...
Now, wait a minute, Dollar.
All right, go ahead.
Where it was all the damage and destruction he was doing, or whatever it was, I'm not sure. But Dollar, there at the end of the war, well, maybe it was shell shock or battle fatigue or whatever they want to call it, Billy went completely off base.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. The first thing he did when he set foot back in this country, back there on the East Coast, was to start blowing things up. So, of course, he ended up in one of them state hospitals back there and never recovered. No, never got over it.
Well, if he's in the hospital, Hank...
Well, he was. But then a while back, he escaped. You see what I mean?
You think he'll be coming here to carry out his old threat?
Well, Dollar, a couple of days ago, I got a phone call right here in this office.
Yes?
All the voice said to me was, "I haven't forgotten." And he hung up.
The voice of Billy Benbow?
Well, who else? Who else could it have been?
I wonder.
Well, I don't. It was Billy, all right. It had to be. And what he meant was, in his twisted way, Billy meant he's coming back here to get even.
Well, now, Hank...
Well, who knows? Maybe Billy's right here in town right now, hiding out somewheres, just waiting for a chance to blow us all to kingdom come. And don't you forget for 1 minute, Dollar, he was an expert with them explosives.
But, Hank, if it was this Benbow, why would he make a point of warning you?
Well, Dollar, man with a mind like that, I don't...
Well, you may be right. Tell me, have you mentioned this in your paper? Have you notified the townspeople?
What, and got them all up into a panic? No, sir. But somehow, Dollar, somehow we got to stop him.
All right. Now, listen,
Yeah?
I take it you haven't much of a police force here.
Yeah, well, we never needed much of a force in a peaceful little town like this.
Well, how about the county estate police or whoever's available?
Oh, sure.
What?
Oh, they'd be glad to help, yeah? Come right over here and help us all they can.
when and if Billy tries them.
Well, by then it might be too late.
Yes, sir. Because every day now, once a day, along about this time, this phone of mine has rung. And when I answered, there wasn't nobody there. So it's Billy, wherever he is, just adding up to that warning he gave me.
Possibly.
So, well, you got any ideas, Dollar?
Well, to be perfectly honest about it, Hank, before I believed that after all these years, Billy would actually come back here, I think I'd like a little more convincing evidence.
Evidence? Well, what's he got to do to convince you? You mean to say you won't believe it until he... Oh, no. There it is again.
Well, maybe it's one of your subscribers.
You pick up that extension. Same time as I pick up this.
All right, if you like. Okay?
Yeah, now. Hello? Hello.
I think I'd better prove that I haven't forgotten.
Billy? Is that you, Billy?
That's right. Billy Benbow.
Now listen, Billy. Hello? Hello?
He's hung up, I'm afraid.
Hey. Now, you see now, Dollar? I told you he wasn't fooling. I told you that... Listen, what was that?
I don't know. It sounded like it came from somewhere just outside of this building.
Remember how much racket automobiles used to make? Time was you practically had to bellow to make yourself heard above the chatter and roar of the engine, the howl of the wind rushing by, and the rattling a rough road gave your poor old buggy and brains. Nowadays, with vastly improved automotive engineering and magnificent new superhighways, you literally purr along the road. This is a vast improvement, but one that can offer danger if you're not alert. You're sitting behind the wheel, with the miles of highway unrolling smoothly beneath you. Suddenly a sharp curve jumps in front of you, and you find that you have to use all the skill of a professional racer to navigate that curve without getting into real big trouble. Your car was so quiet that your speed had crept up stealthily during those long miles of straightaway. You were burning along without realizing it. The point here, a simple one, is this. Your speedometer was put there for a purpose. A purpose you can't afford to forget. Keep alert, take care, and get there.
The next thing I remember was crawling out from under Hank's desk. Hank himself had tried to make a dash for the press room, but was forced back by the blast and ended up beside me. As for the press room, it was a shambles.
Oh, my. Why here, Dollar? Why in here? Why'd he pick to blow up my press this way?
Hank, didn't you say it was your father's idea? That way of getting him out of town?
Yeah, you're right. And he spread the word by putting the stuff in the paper.
All right, then. Maybe this is all he wants to do, put your paper out of business.
Yeah, maybe so, Dollar. I hope so. But he's still got to be caught and locked up again.
Yes, but where do we start looking for him?
Well, he was here to set off this here bomb, wasn't he?
Only seconds after you talked to him on the phone?
Oh, yeah, you're right. If he was somewheres on the telephone, there's no other buildings here by. How could he be around here, too?
Wait a minute. Look. Looks like this is the answer right here.
Why, that's a clockwork.
That's right. A little timing device. That means, Hank, that he could have been 100 miles away.
What is it, Hank? What's happened around here? Sound like a big explosion.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, looks like one, too.
Yep. It was all right, Pete.
What happened? Hey, smells to me like dynamite in here.
Dynamite? What's the matter with your smeller, boy?
What?
Just that big can of benzene I had for cleaning up the type I use on the paper.
It was, huh?
Yeah, that's what it was. I had the dang thing up a little too close to the heater, and it blew up, that's all.
Boy, sure funny it didn't start a fire then, Hank.
What do you mean, funny? We were lucky, that's all.
Well, I guess you were. I'll tell you this, though, Hank.
Don't bother right now. It was only the can of benzene.
No, I mean about you saying there wouldn't ever be any excitement around here when I took on this job.
Oh, yeah. It looks like I was wrong.
What is your job, Pete?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should introduce you to. This is Pete...
Pete Branson, huh?
Oh, yeah. Him and Tony Batten are the rest of the police force here in Muddy Gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, glad to meet you. What'd you say your name is?
Johnny Dollar. But now listen, you hear the hoax out there?
Yeah, Tony's out there too.
Well, you and him just keep that mob out of here, will you? Tell them everything's okay. It was just that can of benzene, like I said.
Sure, Hank.
Now go on now. You and Tony keep that mob out of here.
Okay. It's okay, folks. Just had a little accident back there in the print shop. Everything's under control. But just to make sure, Hank don't want anybody hanging around.
Pete
now,
Branson.
Come on, Tony. Let's get him all away from here. Come
what
on.
What happened to him, Hank?
What, you mean his face? The way it's all cut up that way?
Yeah.
Well, it tells me he once got drugged behind a horse. You know, foot caught in a stirrup.
Oh, I see.
So the one thing he won't ever do anymore is get himself on top of a horse. Me, I don't blame him.
Mm. Hank, that excuse that you gave for the explosion.
Oh, you think I should have told him the truth and let him spread the word and get the whole town into a panic?
Well, if we were sure there won't be any more of them, that Billy's satisfied his yen for revenge by putting your paper out of business, okay, but if your fellow townspeople are still in danger. And didn't you mention the draft board? Who are they?
Oh, they're all long gone, daughter, except for old Grandpa Whedon. Oh, Lord.
Well?
Oh, Lord, that old house of his, it's right over near the terminal end of one of them pipelines off the tank farm. And if that place were to get blowed up, and if one of the tanks were to go, why, there'd be nothing left of this town.
Then if Billy is still around...
Well, how can we know?
Wait a minute, telephone.
What?
It's the old-fashioned kind. It's no dial, which means you have to call an operator.
Well, sure,
which
but...
also means that the operator has to call you. Come on, Hank.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to find out where that... Here now. Hello?
Hank Parnell, whatever happened down there at your newspaper office?
Listen, operator...
Whatever you had blow up over there fairly shook me out of my chair. I haven't had such an explosion here in Muddy Gap since Allie Briscombe still blew up and everybody thought the whole tank farm was gone.
Look, miss...
Look, Hank, you better tell me what happened so I can... Well, I mean, you know, in case somebody calls in and wants to know...
Operator,
well,
will you listen to me a moment?
What? Who are you?
I'm speaking for Hank Parnell.
Anything happened to him? Is he all right?
No, he's all right. Now, listen.
Yes?
Just before the accident... You rang this phone.
Well, that's right. I had a call for him.
Do you know who was calling?
No, he kept his voice low. What'd you say your name is?
Well, I didn't, and it doesn't matter. But what I want to know is, where did...
You know something?
Hmm?
You sound exactly like that Johnny Dollar on the radio.
Operator, listen, please.
And if you are, and you're in town...
Miss...
Well, the folks around here would sure like to know that they would.
Now, listen, do you know where that call for Hank Parnell came from?
Well, of course I do.
Where?
Well, the one outside phone booth we have over outside the drugstore.
Okay, thanks. You heard?
Yeah, Dollar. Then he is in town.
I'm afraid so. Hank, you better take it.
Okay.
I'll listen in.
Hello?
You got the sample, Parnell. The big one's coming later.
Billy.
That's right.
Later when? What do you mean by later?
Maybe tonight.
Billy, listen. Hello? Dollar, we got to get the people out of this town.
300 of them before he can strike again?
I don't know, but we got to try.
It's too late, and you know it.
Well, then what can we do, Dollar?
It's a long chance, Hank, I know it is.
What?
But I'm betting that he's been around this town a long time, maybe for weeks. Now, doesn't that mean anything to you?
Well, I don't get it.
All right, listen. Now, this crazy hunch of mine may be all wrong, but if you'll let me handle this my own way... Will you, Hank? In spite of the fact that it may mean jeopardizing all the people in town.
Anything you say, Dollar, as long as we do something.
All right. Those two boys on the force, do you know where to reach them right now?
Who, Tony and Pete?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Call them up and have them come over here. Then if you and they will follow my orders to the letter and without question. Well?
We'll do anything.
Okay. Get them over here. It meant staking a lot on my limited knowledge of the criminal mind, possibly risking a lot of innocent lives. But I felt sure now that my hunch was right. Fortunately for my plan, Tony Batten got there first. When I told Hank and Tony what their job was, for a moment they couldn't believe I was serious. But they agreed to say nothing to anyone, not even to Pete. Tony went outside then, waited in Hank's old car. When Peter Branson arrived, Hank put him under my orders and he and Tony took off.
And I guess I was right, huh, Mr. Dollar? That was some kind of set explosion in here, wasn't it?
That's right, Pete. It was set, all right, by an expert.
And you got some idea who might have done it?
Either you and I are going to find out, or this town's in danger of being blown to bits.
Are you kidding?
Not a bit of it. I see you carry a gun.
Yes, sir, right here in handy. And if what you say is true, maybe you ought to have one, too.
Well, you better let me have yours then, Pete.
Well, now, wait a minute, Mr. Dollar.
It's your idea.
Well, yeah, I know, but...
Well, let me have it. Orders, Pete. You're under my orders, remember?
Yes, sir. All right. Yes, sir, here you are.
Good. Now, shall we go?
Where are we headed?
Out to see an old man. Old Grandpa Whedon.
Oh, now, you don't think he had anything to do with this explosion, do you?
Pete, I think this mad bomber plans to hit him next.
Did you say mad?
That's right.
Oh, I see.
We're going to go over Grandpa's place with a fine-tooth comb because a bomb may be planted, may be ticking away out there right now.
And if we don't find anything out there...
Well, we'll see.
But why do you think this man would pick on him?
Is it a man?
Well, I certainly guess so. But why on Grandpa?
Well, because once he was a member of a draft board.
Well, now... That don't make sense, does it?
Maybe not, but does anything make sense where a madman is concerned?
You're calling him mad again.
You don't like that word, hmm?
Well, it makes no difference to me, but if it was a madman out on the loose out there...
Pete, he might look every bit as harmless as you do, or as I do.
Yeah, I see. Okay, then. Let's go on out there and have a look, but... I'm betting we don't find anything.
You don't think so, hmm?
Well, I bet on it.
Well, then maybe we won't. It seems to me Hank had a little trouble remembering your last name, Pete. How long is it that you've been on the force?
Huh? Oh, a few weeks, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ever since you first came to town, huh?
Why, yeah, practically.
Mm-hmm. And before that?
Oh, you know, working around the ranches and...
Oh, I thought you didn't ride.
Well, no, not anymore.
Oh, what do you do then?
Oh, you know, odd jobs. Well, why are you asking?
Well, your hands. They look kind of soft to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, come to think of it, seems to me you immediately recognized the smell of dynamite when you came in here. Didn't you?
Well, look, you want to go out there, let's go.
And those scars on your face?
What you getting at?
They're from an explosion, aren't they?
I said, what you getting at?
I've seen too many of those kind of scars not to recognize them. And you knew that because of them, nobody around here would recognize you. Didn't you, Billy?
Okay, Doc, that's enough. You see this?
You got another gun, hmm?
That's right. So instead of reaching for the one I gave you, just you reach up high, now reach. I knew I'd have trouble when you come in town. Because you ain't dumb like the rest of these jerks around here. But not anymore, Dollar, because I'm going to kill you.
You think so, Billy?
Yeah. And then I go back to my place and I get the rig. It's all ready except for the setting of the clock on.
Billy?
Shut up. You know where I plant it then? Yeah, out by old Grandpa Whedon. You hear me? Out there by the tank farm. And I set the clock, so I only got time to get away. Get away in that nice car of yours, Dollar.
Now, Billy, listen to me.
No. You're only trying to stall me. So first it's you, and then I go get that rig.
This rig, Billy?
Huh?
This bomb we found over in your room?
You found it.
You better drop that gun, Billy.
No! Come in! Oh, you pull that trigger, Tony, I still get off a shot.
He's right. Let me take care of this.
Wowee. That's a mighty good left you got there, Dollar.
I guess he was right, though, Hank, about you being pretty stupid.
Well, now, you just wait.
Didn't you think about what might have happened if Tony pulled off a shot right next to that bomb you have in your hand?
Hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. You should have. Remarks? Why bother on this one? As for the expense account, let's call it a total of $350. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a beautiful girl, a handful of coins, and a mysterious disappearance. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is written by Jack Johnstone, produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr., music supervision by Ethel Huber. Johnny Dollar is played by Mandel Kramer. Also featured in our cast were Court Benson as Hank Parnell, Lawson Zerbe as Pete Branson, Cliff Carpenter as Billy Benbow, and Barbara Kassar as the operator. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Art Hanna speaking. The number one network for news, expanded CBS News on the CBS Radio Network.
This is WROW Music in Albany, New York.
A newcomer in town can feel mighty lonesome. Welcome Wagon hostesses make these newcomers feel wanted when they make their cordial Welcome Wagon visits. Their baskets contain useful gifts from civic-minded businessmen, invitations to participate in varied social and volunteer activities of the many civic agencies in the community. In addition, every Welcome Wagon call recipient in the Greater Albany or Schenectady areas, as well as Del Mar, Latham, or Scotia, is invited to attend the local Welcome Wagon Club. This is an organization of newcomers all anxious to make friends. Various Welcome Wagon clubs vary from 30 to 150 members who meet monthly. Their interests include bowling, golf, cards, handcraft, and dancing. You can help to make your new neighbor feel at home. Call State 59640 today and make your neighbor eligible for the many opportunities in a Welcome Wagon club. Remember, State 59640.
WROW Music Time now, 25 minutes before 7 p.m.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Mandel Kramer, our star. In The Mad Bomber Matter, a CBS broadcast from November 26th, 1961. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, you can do so by email. It's qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our website, qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. For our final offering this hour, we have an episode of The Jack Webb Show. Now, some of you may be thinking, Jack Webb, so it must be a police or crime drama of some sort. Well, normally you'd be right, but in this case, you would be very much mistaken. This was a very short-lived sketch comedy and music program, which ran on ABC in 1946. It was produced in San Francisco. And to my knowledge, this was Jack Webb's only foray into comedy. I would compare this program to the Henry Morgan Show, which was also running on ABC at that time. Now, there are only two surviving episodes of the series. I'm not sure if more were produced or if these were the only two that were ever recorded or ever aired, but the one that we have here for you now on the Upstate Radio Theater is from April 10th of 1946. Its title, Razor, Master Detective. It's The Jack Webb Show.
This is the Jack Webb Show. Ah, yes. Time. 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 Oh, my darling. Have you ever stopped to think what Wednesday night at 9:30 means? Oh, my darling, Wednesday night at 9:30 means Wednesday night at 9:30. Ah, my darling, if we were on a windswept hill, if we could but go there, if we could but be there alone, just you and I and that windswept hill. Just the three of us. Just you. Just I. Just that windswept hill. The three of us, that is. I could but whisper but these three immortal words in your ear. Words as old as time. 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 These three words would I but whisper. The Jack Webb Show.
There's too damn many strings on this thing.
This week, Mayor Lapham announced that the fight was still on to raise streetcar fares. But the Jack Webb Show sinks lower and lower. Yes, the Jack Webb Show, or Lost Wednesday. That means Phil Bavero and those eight retards known as the Ragged Heirs, Clancy Hayes, who brought music to the marina, will sing the words whether they match the music or not. Tiny Nora McNamara, pretty as a picture, will be framed by the orchestra again this week. John Galbraith, a rare Oakland importation, will prove that anyone can be a radio actor. Due to an increase in our program budget, the above people and things will be assisted in tonight's production by an all-star cast of thousands. And if you hurry, you have just time to catch the second show at your neighborhood movie.
Tune to Facts on Parade.
Yes, here's the program all Africa has been raving about. It's Facts on Parade. The only program devoting its entire time to bringing you the unusual, the bizarre, the little known, and that's a fact. This is the program that has everyone saying,
"Why, I knew that all the time."
Yes, many college students have used this program instead of their books to graduate. And that's a fact. And now here's the man who says, that's a fact, for fact-loving people everywhere, Fred Fact.
Thank you, Fred Flooper, and good evening. And that's a fact. Here's a curious item that comes to us from Fredville, Florida, sent in by Fred Fudge. And that's a fact. Fred Fudge offers this observation. If the uniforms of all the privates in the army were laid end to end, they would most certainly reach. That's a fact.
Our next item comes from Fredtown, Scotland, submitted by Mrs. Fred Fink.
This one is very strange. She says, and I'm not quite sure this is even a fact, robbing Peter to pay Paul is not much better than robbing Paul to pay Peter. And that's a fact.
And this one wins the Fred Fact Fine Finders of Fact Award. It is submitted by Fred Fang, who lives in Fred Valley, Minnesota.
Fred Fang makes this quaint observation. He says that on this program, we seem to show partiality to the name Fred. And that's a Fred. I mean a fact.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this material has been approved by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. We wish to thank the Federal Bureau of Investigation for this material, which they assure us is material.
Is it Dick Tracy?
No.
Is it Sherlock Holmes?
No.
Is it Mr. North?
No.
Is it Mrs. North?
No.
Is it the Thin Man?
No.
The Fat Man?
No.
The Saint?
No.
The Whistler?
No.
The Rod? The Bat? The Green Hornet? The Spider? The Dog? The Cat? The Mouse?
No!
It's the Razor!
He's sharp.
Another conspicuous first for radio, The True Adventures of the Razor. Tonight's story, another close shave for the Razor. Entitled The Case of the Confused Keyhole. The Razor is brought to you each week at this time by, well, the Razor is no cheap commercial detective. He's sustaining. Leave us look in on the Razor, sitting in his study, thinking.
3 hours and I haven't had a case. This inactivity is maddening. I'm in a rut. I might as well admit it. As a last resort, I may telephone my sweetheart, Peaches Latool. Too late now. I have a murder on my hands. Hello, this is the Razor. Who's been murdered? No murder? Oh, you have the wrong number. What? Who? Bufano? Benny Bufano? The press club cat has been stolen? What? What? No, don't touch a thing. This looks serious. You know, Bufano, I suspect the archenemy of the Razor, Stan Strop. I'll go to work on him right away. The press club cat stolen. Being held for ransom. I wonder why. Those poor reporters haven't any money. I'll bet there's a half dozen murders before I get to the bottom of this. I'm off for the press club. Peaches Latool. What are you doing at the press club? This is gang dinner night.
What do you mean, press club? You're on the opposite side of town. You're at my house.
You sure?
Yeah. You've driven all the way across town backwards.
Must have been that Saratan I put in the gas tank. Well, I'm off for the press club.
Raise it, darling. You seem to be in a lather.
Well, I am. This case has got me stumped. Who stole that cat and why?
I don't know.
Neither do I.
Oh.
Wait. Wait.
Yes?
I think I hear a murder out in the hall.
Oh, Razor, you're on edge.
Yes, yes, perhaps I am. There, did you hear the shot?
That was the phone bell.
Oh. This is the Razor. Who? Dick Powell? Oh, well, just fine, thank you. And you? That's fine. Well, I can't be three places at once. How should I know who sapped you? Peaches, I have a plan.
You have?
Yes.
Oh, that's fine.
Yes, isn't it? Peaches, what'd you say?
Nothing. That was the phone bell.
Oh, this is the Razor. What? Who? Humane Society. Everyone, you say? What? What? No, don't touch a thing. This looks serious. You know, Humane Society, I suspect the archenemy of the Razor, Stan Strop. I'll go to work on him right away. Peaches, you're not going to believe this. That press club cat was only the beginning. Every cat in town has been stolen. Peaches, I've made a list of all the suspects. Round them up and take them down to the San Francisco Opera House. That should hold them all. I'll meet you there in 1 hour, if I don't run into a murder.
They're all here, Razor. 4,000 suspects.
This ought to be easy. Somebody will betray himself with a guilty expression.
We've been here 4 days now.
Yeah. The suspects have thinned out to a mere 3,000. Peaches, I'm on the verge of cracking this case.
We've been here 3 weeks now.
Yes, and I've thinned the suspects down to a scant 1,000. Peaches, this fellow's playing hard to get.
There he goes, Razor, the last suspect.
Yes, and not one of them had a guilty expression. Peaches, this whole thing has been a dismal failure. We're on the wrong track. The Razor admits.
He's failed.
Oh, let's go home.
Right. Look out, Peaches! Did they slice you, Peaches?
No, I'm all right.
You know, Peaches, I'm not sure, but I think the men in that car were trying to kill me. I suspect the archenemy of the Razor stands drop. I'll go to work on him right away.
Scrape the sky, Razor. I've got you covered.
Egad! Trapped by the notorious Phil Furs.
We interrupt the adventures of the Razor to bring you a brief message. The Razor is no cheap commercial detective. No one can sponsor the Razor. And now, back to the Razor.
I've got you covered now, Phil Furs.
That happened awfully fast.
Yes, didn't it?
Razor, look. That dog is growling at Phil Furs.
Yes, Peaches. Phil Furs, I arrest you for the theft of the Press Club cat and every other cat in town.
Razor, are you sure?
But of course, I should have known it all along. That dog was growling not at Phil Furs, but at the sweater he's wearing.
The sweater Phil Furs is wearing?
You're too late, Razor.
Egad, think of it, Peaches. Phil Furs has skinned every cat in town.
But why did he steal the Press Club cat?
Simple, Peaches. That was done to confuse me. How silly. Yes, Phil Furs, I arrest you for engaging in the illegal practice of the manufacture and the sale of Catsmere sweaters.
Back home again, again, in Indiana. It just seems that I can see that same old candlelight still shining bright through the sycamores for me. And that new mown hay sends out its fragrance through the fields I used to roam. And when I dream about the moonlight on the Wabash, how I'm longing for my Indiana home. Back home again, again, in Indiana. It just seems that I can see that same old candlelight still shining bright through the sycamores for me. And that new mown hay sends out its fragrance through the fields I used to roam. And when I dream about the moonlight on the Wabash, how I'm longing for my Indiana home.
It's contest time on the Jack Webb Show.
Yes, this is that attractive gift offer you've been all waiting for.
Say, Webb, we'd better pitch it straight.
Okay, John, I guess we have. Tell them what we like, will
you? Okay, gang, we got a ginger peach prize just waiting for the person who writes the best letter or postcard on the subject, how to get the Jack Webb Show off the air. Executives of the American Broadcasting Company are not
eligible to enter this contest.
That's right. Folks, John's not fooling. We really would like to get your letters and cards. And the subject once more, John boy?
All right, but most of them probably have their letter written already. The subject is how to get the Jack Webb Show off the air. All letters must be postmarked not later than Sunday midnight, April 14th.
Just address your letters and cards to the Jack Webb Show, American Broadcasting Company, San Francisco, Zone 2.
Honest, you'll like the prize. We can barely afford to give it away.
Sad people everywhere. This is your program. Yes, sad ones. This is the Misery Hour, presented each week at this same sad time by the makers of Phil DeMille's pills. Is your head splitting with Nyap? Oh, that miserable Nyap feeling. Each of us has it at one time or another. No use trying to fight Nyap, for Nyap fights back. The only way to rid yourself of Nyap is to have your head removed, which is, of course, unless you have plenty of money, is not practical these days. Fight Nyap with Phil DeMille's pills, a harmless little stimulant that contains small amounts of opium, heroin, marijuana, and cyanide. Before the various stages of Nyap set in, head Nyap, back Nyap, foot Nyap, and ear Nyap, fight Nyap effectively with Phil DeMille's pills. Nyap, spelled backward, is pain. And now your host for the evening and conductor of the Misery Hour, Bill Ball.
Thank you, Terry Tear. Well, friends, before tonight's interviews begin, I am happy to report that Gladys Glue, you remember Gladys? She had on the pink formal and the big green picture hat. Lovely child. Well, Gladys Glue has decided to stick it out. She will divorce those first two husbands and stay married to the third. No applause, please. I'm sure that all of you will recall that charming little French chap, Dale Duet, the little two-headed boy. Well, I'm happy to report that little Dale has solved his problem. The public library has granted him two cards, and now he can have a book for each head. No applause, please. And now, the case of Mrs. P.G. McMee of Milpitas. Oh, me, Mrs. McMee. You're all going to pieces. Pull yourself together now. Now, what is your problem?
Oh, I feel miserable, Mr. Ball.
We all do on this program, my dear.
Well, Mr. Ball, I don't know whether you would consider this a problem or not.
Well, tell it, my dear, and we'll see.
Well, I married my husband, Melvin McMee, and I never really did get along with his grandfather because the old man said that I had a face like his sister's cousin who was a gangster because he was given a good beating by her brother-in-law, who later turned out to be the husband of a very wealthy oil woman from Oklahoma, who never suspected her father of having anything to do with the Nazis, because as far back as the three boys could remember, their mother was mean to them and never allowed their younger sister any of the privileges that Flossie had, which caused the uncle great concern because he had been on the lookout for her mother's brother ever since the last war and was determined that no matter what happened, he would not forgive them. So they are after me time and time again for an answer, and I still have my ambitions. Well, Mr. Ball, my problem is, should I?
Would you mind repeating that, please? Better still, let's have the next case.
Good evening, Mr. Ball. My name is Hobart Heap, and I live in Sausalito. And I have a problem.
Yes, go right ahead. Don't be nervous.
Thank you, Mr. Sausalito. My name is Ball Heap, and I live in Hobart.
Now, please, don't be nervous.
Yeah. Well, my name is Hobart Sausalito, and I live in a heap.
Now. You're all unstrung. I believe your name, didn't you say your name was Sausahipo, and
yes,
you live in Ball Barto?
Yes. Well, I have a problem. I am a gambler, and I do the same thing all gamblers do. I gamble. I started gambling pennies at first, and then the grocery money, and then I gambled all my wife's savings away. Our car, our home, all gone.
all gone now.
And what does your wife think about all this?
I don't know. She left me yesterday. This morning she came back with the children and the washing machine, but I'd gambled the washing machine away.
I see. Well, about all you have left is your home, isn't it?
No. No, that went this afternoon. Just 2 hours after I lost my job. Life's just about over for me, Mr. Ball. Gambling has been my undoing.
I see. And your problem?
Mr. Ball.
Yes?
I'd like to know who looks good to you in the fourth at Bay Meadows.
Half-track surplus salesman.
This week, as it must to all men, Army Day came to the infantrymen. In San Francisco, the 2nd Division paraded up Market Street.
What about surplus?
In New York, the Rainbow Division paraded up Broadway.
What about surplus?
Yes, in Washington, Army bigwigs were faced with the perplexing question of surplus. Where is it?
Thus, this Army Day, people all over America were asking the question, what about surplus? Who's buying it? Or can they? To bring an end to these questions, a page torn from the private files of Hal Halftrack, surplus salesman.
Oh, you bet, madam. Why, that 16-inch shell will make a beautiful ashtray.
Well, are you sure it won't go off?
Oh, positively. Why, madam, our detonator experts have gone over that shell from stem to stern. It's as safe as a baby's rattle. Yes, you'll certainly surprise your husband with this ashtray.
All right, I'll take it. Here you are.
Fine. You won't regret this buy, madam. No, sir, you won't regret it. Over there. Goodbye.
Over there.
Well, it'll still make a good ashtray.
Good afternoon. Are you Hal Halftrack?
Right the first time. Hal Halftrack, and I'm dealing in army surplus.
Fine. Then you're just the man I want to see. I've just come from the draft.
Ah, too bad, too bad. Almost got drafted myself once. Going in the army, eh? Well, you've come to the right place. You have a decided advantage over the boys who went in early. You're going into the army equipped.
Yes, but Mr.
Don't say another word. I'm going to outfit you, son. From top to bottom, you're going to be wired for sound.
But Halftrack...
If you don't quit interrupting me, fella, I'll send you right into the army just like you are. Now, you'll need... Tell me, fella, what branch of the service do you think you're going into? Well, it really doesn't matter. First off, you're going to need a few uniforms, about 12 dozen of each. Paratroopers, cavalry, mechanized infantry, infantry, and air corps. That's in case you're transferred.
But,
You were about to say, what if you're promoted? Well, I thought of that too, fella. I'm throwing in officer's uniforms for each of the branches, 12 dozen each.
I think you're making a mistake.
Yes, you thought I was leaving out your means of transportation. Well, you're wrong. I'm putting in a fleet of jeeps on your list and a staff car in case you're appointed to the higher echelon.
Halftrack.
Halftrack. I'm glad to see you're taking an interest in this. After all, it's for your benefit, not mine. Yes, indeed, you will need a halftrack. Ours haven't been working too well lately, so I'm going to include three in your order.
But...
That's a good question. What if you don't stay in the ground forces? What if you fly? Well, we're all out of B-29s, but I can let you have four B-17s.
But...
All right. You can have six. I'll stretch a point.
You don't seem to understand.
Oh, yes. You're worried about that fighter protection up there. Well, I'm including a dozen each. One dozen P-38s, one dozen P-40s, one dozen P-51s, and if you're lucky, I may throw in a half dozen of the new jets.
Halftrack.
You've already got one of those in your list, fella. Now, there's only one more thing I can think of. Let me see. Chemical warfare, yes. You'll need a full supply of all the poisonous gases plus a snip kit so you won't poison yourself. And I happen to have one carload of the late gas masks.
But...
You'll need every one of them. You'll meet a lot of friends in the Army. You know, I can't see why all the rest of the folks who come in here can't use the war surplus items I've sold you. They're all handy. Now, what have you got to say to that?
Only this... I'm the clerk of your draft board, and for some reason you were overlooked in the early call. You're going into the army equipped. You've just been drafted.
Well, tonight's egg was laid on the vocal side by Clancy Hayes and Nora McNamara. John Galbraith and Ethel Sterling blew the lines. Bill Bavaro and his ragged airs were the music. Dick Breen glued the joints together. This is Jack Webb saying goodnight, gang. Hey, and look in on us again next week about 9:30. Don't forget your letters and cards, will you?
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
From April 10th, 1946 on ABC, The Jack Webb Show. Mr. Webb's only foray into sketch comedy, before embarking on a much more successful career as an actor and ultimately producer and director of realistic police and detective-oriented dramas on radio and ultimately television. And that will wrap it up for this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you for your company. I invite you to tune in again soon for another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.